Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen, and it is Wednesday, and that's the 25th of September. And I believe that puts us at 42 days left before Donald Trump is out of all of this. So we'll see about that. In the meantime, Donald is doing everything he can do to be sure that he loses this election. And the amazing part of it is, and I've talked a great deal about this, is that Donald has placed every bit of his economic analysis future on tariffs. Now, I have to laugh at the way the media portrays this, because it's not that they're being unfair or untrue. They're not doing any of that. But they're actually leaving out maybe one of the most important explanations that needs to go along with this whole tariff discussion, and I'm not sure why they're not bringing it up. I understand why the political people aren't bringing it up, and it's because I think they're worried that it might be taking people to a place that would be too complicated, and they don't want to go there. And so they're just saying something very simple. And the simple thing that they're saying is partly true. Partly true. So here's what's being left out. First of all, they're talking about tariffs. And with regard to tariffs, they're all ignoring the Smoot-Hawley tariffs from the Depression. And for the media side, I'm going to guess that they're leaving it out because it's just unnecessary. They don't have to go into all that because it's not their job. In a way, maybe it is, but I think that they want to clarify things for people in the simplest way and to tell the story honestly, and especially with regard to the explanations that are coming from the experts. All that maybe sounds a little complicated, but here's what it amounts to. Going back into the 1930s is not exactly something that appeals to everybody. And what does appeal to people is a simple statement that if you increase tariffs, that the price of the tariffs, the tax that is put on the goods that come in from other countries, will be paid for by me and you. So, you know, if you put a 200% tariff on a giant piece of equipment that Deere would sell for $10 million, well, the buyer of the equipment is going to pay the tariff. So that's the inflationary part. And there's no question that that is, just by itself, inflationary. Meaning the prices are going up. Simple enough. But it's so much more complicated than that, because do you depress demand for all of this equipment anyway so that no one buys it? Is there equivalent equipment that could be purchased from someone here in the United States? And if that's true, if there is, and by the way, there may well not be, especially in the case of someone like Deere, because they do produce very highly specialized equipment. So the point is, there are a whole lot of factors that you have to add into all of this, and there's no question, you're not going to get a news report that's going to tell all of this. So maybe the best thing from their standpoint is to just forget the talk about what happened 90 years ago and just say it's inflationary, which, like I said, is partially true. Partially. Now, in addition to all of that, there are things that happen that are, say, what we call unintended consequences. For example, you send the economy into a total collapse, and then instead of worried about inflation, you are suddenly worried about deflation. But understand this. There's nothing good that's going to come out of these tariffs. Nothing at all. Because all that you're going to do is start a war between the United States government and either some foreign country or against our own American corporations. However you describe it, the last thing that this country needs is either a war against companies or some kind of fight with foreign countries over how you're going to ever get them to do any business with us anyway, because why would they want to do business with us when all we're offering them is a giant fight, a fight over tariffs? And by the way, the history of tariffs beyond the whole 1930s business, which every high school kid knows that these 1930s tariffs sent us into one of the worst depressions in the history of the United States. I say one of the worst because when we talk about the 1930s, we often leave out the depression that occurred like from 1837 to 1843. But I think we leave that one out because it's so long ago that it's just not even worth the time. It's certainly worth some study if you're an economist or, you know, somebody that wants to understand the historical relevance of, you know, economic developments versus other problems in U.S. history. I mean, there are all kinds of reasons you might want to know about that 1837 to 1843 depression, but it might not apply to just the average person walking down the street. But what does apply is the Smoot-Hawley history, which is economically horrific. It put the United States on a precipice which only we were able to pull back from for one reason and one reason only. And the name is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt saved the United States in the 1930s. Everybody knows that. This is not a real discussion. This is not an argument at all, for sure. Franklin Roosevelt saved this place. He didn't save it with pure capitalism. He saved it with some very pragmatic programs that tried to solve specific problems for people in this country. And with that in mind, I think it's probably obvious, should be, that what Kamala Harris is offering is not a fight with Donald. She's offering some solutions to problems that we have economically as a country. Now, also understand that the United States is in somewhat of a boom period. I mean, we're extremely successful. Donald talks about saving America and how the economy is crashing off the edge of a cliff and all that. But that's not true. This economy is growing. It is expanding. And as many people have pointed out, especially economists, this country is expanding at a rate that exceeds the rate of every other country in the world. And for years, people said, China's catching us. They're almost here. We're in trouble. Here they come. But guess what? That's no longer true. China's gone. China is itself on a precipice, about to fall a long way unless they figure out what to do. They've got a sort of growth that has diminished to almost nothing, and they've got debt that is enormous. In fact, if you go by GDP, if you go by the percentage, the debt as a percentage of GDP, they are twice as bad as we are, if in fact you believe that we're bad. Because some economists don't think that, and frankly, I don't think it. And one of the reasons I don't think it is because we're actually a touch better than the United States was with regard to debt. We're a touch better than we were at the end of World War II. It was like 140% of GDP. That's the debt back then. And right now we're maybe 125. And the only reason I like to make that comparison is because if we were at 140% of GDP at the end of World War II, and we grew the way we have since then, well, I think all it tells us is that at 140% of GDP, it is not a guarantee that you're going off of a cliff. Now, it's true that at the end of World War II, there were people who believed that the United States was on the verge of a renewed depression. They were wrong. At present, we've got a lot of people who think we're in a recession. They don't say depression, but they think we're in a recession, and we're not. We certainly have just gone through a period of an inverted yield curve. Wow, that'll make anybody's eyes glaze over. But an inverted yield curve, which normally leads to a recession, and that inverted yield curve that we've just gone through existed for over 500 days, which is historic. And also potentially damaging. But it's not something that an American administration could even control. It's beyond anybody's control. This is the market. The market sets these rates. And the market's got us, or certainly had us, an inverted yield curve, and it's trying to reverse that right now. And normally, when you reverse it, you do go into a recession. And let me say this. Anybody who thinks that you can go through a period of economic advance and never have a downturn, well, you're just kidding yourself. And you can't just blame somebody the first time it turns down, because, in fact, markets and economic markets for economies, they go up and down. They do. Countries' gross domestic products go up and down. Markets, stock markets, bond markets, commodity markets, everything goes up and down. There's no stopping it. So to even think that you can is foolishness, and to wait for it to happen and then to point your finger at somebody because it does go down is absolute stupidity. Now, I understand we're dealing with Donald Trump, so stupidity has got to be out here somewhere close, because that's Donald. The man doesn't know anything. He went to Wharton. He talks about going to Wharton as if he's some kind of a genius, and yet the people from Wharton say that he was the worst student that they ever had. And it's not just something that they said because of the election. They've said this for a long time, that Donald Trump was one of their worst students in history. Somebody else could say, well, that's the way they are. They're always pointing at Donald. They're always saying he's bad. Well, you know what? Maybe there's a reason that everybody's always pointing at him, because maybe he's always doing something. And I think that's a pretty good explanation for why they're pointing fingers at him, because he's always doing things that require somebody to point some fingers in his direction. However, none of that's an argument for or against tariffs. And the argument against tariffs is that there's a history that goes along with these tariffs of destroying economic growth. Now, on the other side, we all agree, including Joe Biden, who has left some tariffs in place, that there can be a use for tariffs, and especially if they are targeted. They could be targeted at protecting a company, or they could be targeted at protecting an industry. And they can be controllable, that is, not wildly insane. Like, you know, 200%, that's not controlling anything. You put a 200% tariff on anybody, and you're creating havoc for no reason. Why? Because some of the businesses at Deere are being reset up in Mexico, and there are other businesses that are replacing what they have here, which, as Deere points out, they create more jobs and more higher income jobs. But I wouldn't even get carried away with that argument, for the simple reason it all depends on overall economic growth. Now, in our history, going back to 1945, when we got out of World War II, one of the things that we did is we sent all of the GIs, if they wanted to go, to college for free. And the following 20 years turned into an incredible period of growth. The greatest growth in the history of the country that has produced the greatest growth in history. I mean, our country is incredibly successful. We have a history of it. We've kept it going. And, you know, people look back at our history and they marvel at the way, really, that Franklin Roosevelt pulled this country out of the Depression with really amazing programs. And I'll give you an example. And this is the easiest one for everybody to understand. Back in the 30s, in the 20s, and 1910, all those years, when a bank went out of business, all your money was gone, period. Every penny. If the bank came back and said, we're broke, you're broke. You got nothing. Now, would you put your money in the bank if you knew that the first time it goes broke, you're broke? Hard to say. A lot of people did it, and they went broke. On the other hand, a lot of people put their money under mattresses, and then we look back 100 years later and we laugh. But here's what Roosevelt did. You should all know this. This is really easy history. He created the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, and he said all the banks will commit money to this organization. And anytime a bank goes out of business, we'll take the money from the FDIC that's been put in there by all these other banks, and we'll use it to pay off those people who would have been losers. Pretty smart. And If that fund ran out of money, then you would just tap all the other banks to make up the difference. So people would not go broke based on whichever bank they put their money in. Awfully smart. It has worked. The United States has used this to protect its citizens from failing financial institutions. Franklin Roosevelt was a smart man. Now he's not here, so we can't tap him anymore to find out what we're going to do. But Kamala is certainly attempting to come up with some ideas that will target individual problems that we've got as a country in order to try to help solve some of these issues so that we can do better. Now, an additional part of this is that she has said, and it sounds like it might be on the right track, and it might not be enough. It might not be the only required solution. But she has targeted small business creation. Our country does depend on the growth of small businesses. And she is offering small business creators a $50,000 tax credit in order to start a business. Sounds pretty good. It's certainly not what Donald calls it. Donald calls it communism. Of course, he thinks it's funny because he can say communist Kamala. See, he thinks that's funny. It might be funny to him, and it might be funny to a few million other Americans, but it's definitely not smart, and it's definitely not right. This is not about communism. This is about creating tax breaks targeted at certain groups in order to help them to get off the ground. Now, in addition to that, I mean, this is just me, although there are other people who agree, but this is me. This is what I believe. Once before, we sent people to college for free. Do it again. Send people to college for free. And what are you going to produce? A highly educated population. Now, if you think that is going to hurt the United States, well, go back to 1947 and check it out. It didn't do that. I mean, you could say, well, that's not what's responsible for the huge growth in the 50s and 60s. On the other hand, you can certainly say it didn't prevent the huge growth in the 50s and 60s. So there are several ways of looking at this. But I will say that this whole thing of college education points you in the direction of technology growth. The production of all kinds of new ideas technologically that can put the United States on the cutting edge of future economic activity. It could. We certainly aren't going to get smart having everybody sit at home while they're waiting for their next job at McDonald's to open up. And Kamala Harris is not putting us in that direction. She is trying to encourage people, to inspire them, to do things that have never been done before. Many things that we don't even know what we're even thinking about or talking about, because maybe some of these ideas haven't even been thought of yet. But I can tell you that without an educated population, it won't happen. Now, let me flip back a second to China. because China has some big problems. And part of their problem has to do with certainly how much money they owe. And we owe a lot of money, too. We, of course, could have solved our problem months ago. We could have solved it in the early months of the Biden administration. We could have solved it at the end of the Trump administration. And a lot of people knew about it during both administrations, and they didn't do it. They could have issued 100-year bonds. It is so smart. But we didn't do it. And the interest rates have now gone up. So the only way you're going to get around that problem is basically cross your fingers and hope that those interest rates come back down at least one more time. If they do, well, then you've got the whole thing settled, because you go into the marketplace and you sell bonds to the public. And when they buy them, they're buying bonds that yield like 2% for 100 years, 2% a year. And what happens is that in 100 years, the money that you pay back is worth dramatically less, because there's a built-in inflationary expectation in all of this. And beyond that, we can afford to pay the interest at 2% per year, but we can't afford to pay the interest at 10% per year. If we'd have done something about it when it was 2, we wouldn't be worried about it when the rates are sitting around 5. But we didn't. So, I mean, we can go back and point fingers at everybody, and I'm saying that you can point fingers at Joe Biden as well. But it won't fix the problem. The only way to fix the problem is to get this short-term borrowing into long-term bonds. That's how you have to do it. And you don't want to do it at 4 and 5%. You would prefer to do it at 2%. And so that's what we're going to be looking for if we have any sense whatsoever. So there are a lot of factors that play into this whole idea of how do you create growth. How much money you've borrowed, how much you have to pay back. A lot of factors here. This is complicated economics. Not impossible, but complicated. So in the meantime, okay, let me back up a second here. Michael Kaysen says, who would invest long-term at 2%? Great question, Michael. Here's the answer. Go back 2.5 years, and everybody wanted to pump their money into 2% bonds. Everybody wanted it. Why? Because bonds were in so much demand that when they pushed the prices of the bonds up, it naturally forced the interest rates down. And basically, we were almost in a panic where people were looking for anywhere to put their money, where they would have safety. And the United States is the safest place in the world. We've never missed a payment. Never. We pay it all. Whatever we owe, we pay. So you get the rates down to 2%, and I promise you, people will pay the going rate. They did 2-3 years ago. They'll do it again. And by the way, they didn't just pay that rate for a month. They were paying that 2%, 2.5% rate for a couple of years. You could have stretched that out for a couple of years, putting those bonds out into the marketplace, and they would have sold all the time. And again, by the way, you say who? Well, the answer is countries, other countries. But let me also say, in addition to other countries, government agencies, Because one of the things that you should know, everybody, is that, you know, people say, well, we all owe all this money to China. Well, we owe like $1 trillion to China. That's true. But we owe 10% of our national debt to ourselves. In fact, it's more than 10%. So we actually owe it to ourselves because our own agencies buy these bonds. So the answer is it's institutional, but they do it. And they don't just do it for a little bit. They do it for a long period. And in fact, in the case of Michael, I'm going to send you a great article from Barron's, which I use with my classes all the time. And it's called The Case for 100-Year Bonds. And it was a Barron's article that not only tells the story, but it has a great chart of the history of our interest rates going all the way back to 1780. So that's cool. You can really take a look at what's happened in the history of our country economically. It will help anybody to understand the possibilities. But one thing for sure, we're not going broke. That's not the United States' problem. The United States has a lot of problems, but that's not it. We're not going broke. We're not that overborrowed. Certainly China's overborrowed. They're twice as much in debt as we are. People always say, oh, China's good, we're bad. Absolutely wrong. China's got a horrible debt problem, and part of that debt, amazingly, was created by the fact that they built what we today call ghost cities. These ghost cities were places in China where they thought they were going to put 8-10 million people, you know, just a regular big city, and they were going to put them in apartments, and they were going to have, you know, different buildings for banks, for universities, for, you know, all the different institutions that you would need in one of these cities. They built about 6 or 7 of them, and they've used almost none of them. I mean, they've got a small number of people in these cities because the Chinese didn't want to go there. So when you look at these cities, maybe they have 10, 20, 30,000 people living there, and the people who are there are basically maintenance people. They keep the place clean. They keep the place working, going, but it's empty. And all you got to do is go online to Google and say Chinese ghost cities. You can read the whole story. There's a lot going on out here that the people in the United States just don't know anything about. But at any rate, China's not overtaking us. And in fact, nobody in the world is, because we're the best in the world. We are. And there are a lot of things about where we are right now, which, by the way, are pretty good. But the one part that isn't so good is the stock market. So let me go back and say some things about the market again. In the first place, let me talk about DJT, that crazy Donald Trump SPAC, Special Purpose Acquisition Company. You know what I'm talking about. The DJT business that is no business at all, that does nothing, and has ended up like every other Donald Trump business, collapsing into zero, except for it's not quite zero yet, but it did get down to 12. Now, in the last couple of days, it has bounced to 14. Because on the 20th, nobody offered to sell their shares. And a lot of people were very worried that Donald and his friends would exit the company at any price, and that would send everything to zero. So it's sort of a relief kind of a situation. Everybody's saying, oh, wow, We are glad that we don't have that problem. And so it's bounced from 12 to 14. So now let's get away from that. And let's talk about a much more serious problem that we face in the United States and, in fact, around the world. We have just gone through quite a boom where companies like Microsoft, $3 trillion, Apple, $3 trillion, and then go down the list. There are a whole bunch of others, NVIDIA and a lot of the other big names, Meta, which is Facebook. They're all out there. You know their names, Netflix, just all the big tech companies. They've gone through the roof. They have gained enormous value. Amazon, put that one in there. And believe me, Amazon's a great company. I mean great. But it's, you know, a shopping mall. That's what it is. It's a shopping mall that's also added in an AI component. We don't know at this point what AI is going to mean to anybody. We think it's going to be pretty good, and it probably will be. But we don't know for sure. It's still, look, everything's a gamble in business. I'll tell you who's doing great when it comes to AI. In fact, they've been in AI longer than everybody else, and that's IBM. And that's really part of the story that Kamala has told, which is if you get into a beginning business that's going to grow and you do it early and you do it in a smart way, you might become one of the big people in the industry and make enormous amounts of money. And in fact, that's what IBM has done. IBM, which, you know, we recognize that was the company that made those giant computers that filled up rooms. You know, these computers were so big. I mean, you fill up like a gym with these computers. And then they didn't really have the power that we have in a silly laptop. But for its time, it was revolutionary. And then IBM came back with all kinds of interesting things, like the Selectric typewriter. They were smart. They came up with ideas. And they kept changing as they needed to. And at present, this is a company that has really set its future based on AI. And you can see in the marketplace right now, even though some other companies are going up in value, again, Microsoft and Apple being at the lead, $3 trillion, IBM is going crazy. IBM is, you know, rocketed up over $200 a share from much lower levels before. And a lot of investors think that IBM is maybe the future of AI, probably is. They're smart people. They've done a great job. And by the way, this is how countries become hugely successful, led by businesses that are hugely successful. So that's all good. But the problem is, and this is what I've talked about, the overall country has been stuck. Not in a depression, not in a recession, just flat. While these seven or eight or nine, they sometimes call them the Magnificent Seven, but it could be eight, nine, ten of them. These companies have been just terrific. And they've really made our country. They really have. You go to Microsoft and Apple, what they've done has definitely led the world. and put the United States in the lead around the world. But you just have to know that the day will come when investors will pour out of those companies, even just temporarily, and it will cause a bit of chaos. You know, we've had crashes before, and we will have them again. And the conditions that we've got right now are the ones that produce crashes. But again, I'm going to make you a little crazy, but I'm going to give you a name. The name is Joseph Schumpeter. Joseph Schumpeter wrote about creative destruction. And essentially it's this. The more creative you are, the more you set the stage down the road for marketplace destruction. It's just, there's no way to stop it. And you can talk about all the companies and that have been in our history that have been so great. But my favorite is Xerox. Because you got people around that say, what the heck is Xerox? Okay, I understand. Young people don't know what that is. I know it because I ask them all the time. What's Xerox? And they say, I don't know, what's Xerox? So anyway, if Xerox went down, and it did, and Kodak and Polaroid and, you know, so many names, you can go all the way back into our history. If that happened, well, then I think you got to understand. It's the same place Apple's going to go. It's the same place everyone's going to go. Check out Joseph Schumpeter and you'll understand. Okay, time to do some business, some good business, some healthy business, some expanding business. And then we'll come back to the complicated world of American economics prior to an interview tonight on MSNBC for 2 hours, Kamala Harris. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, first we're going to talk about Wendy's. Wendy's will provide you with dinner that you won't believe. I'm talking about the wings, talking about smoked meats. I'm talking about hamburgers, cheeseburgers. I'm talking about patty melts with lots of onions. Sounds great to me. Just, you know, when I talk about it here, I get hungry. Great food at Wendy's. They've got salads. They've got the baby back ribs, which are my favorites. They've got onion rings. The best drinks that I've ever come across. I'm talking about, of course, iced tea. I know other people are thinking of other possibilities. When you look at it across the board, I mean, Wendy's has got it all. They really do. They're at 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road, and they're also in Defiance, Missouri. Same great food in Defiance, same Wendy's. You'll love it. Check them out. And just keep saying thank you to Ben and his wife. Great business. Now, you want some jewelry? You go to Jewels on Hampton. And they do have jewelry. You walk in the store and you just look at the cases and cases that go on forever because they've just got so much jewelry in there at 4506 Hampton. It's a really good business. And they will do business with you. For example, if you want to buy and sell coins or jewelry, they'll do all of that with you. And they'll try to be as fair as they can possibly be because Al, who's the owner and started all this, is just a great guy. And you'll know it when you see him because he's so friendly and everybody loves him. And that's just the way it is. It's Jewels on Hampton. And if you trust them to take care of your other jewelry needs, you'll love the fact that they'll also fix your watch. They are great at Jewels on Hampton. Now, if you go to Clayton, which is just back down the road west a little bit, you will find the best men's clothing at the St. Louis Suit Company. The suits are great, top quality. The overcoats are a must for the cold weather that's coming. The shoes, the shirts, hats, they've got it all. But nothing is as good as their ties. Wow, do they have ties. And because they've got ties, I've got ties. I have so many ties, I don't even know what to do with them. I couldn't wear them all. But I love them. I give them away sometimes. But I can tell you right now, it's a great clothing store. And then I'll also tell you that if you're getting married, you want to go to the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton because they'll really take care of you when it comes to wedding attire. They are the top of the line in St. Louis. They're on the corner of Forsyth and Central in Clayton, St. Louis Suit Company. They've been there for 30 years. I'm sure they'll be there for 30 more. Great company, the St. Louis Suit Company. Now, if you go out way west, you'll end up on 141 and Olive, and that'll take you to Talena's. Talena's Pizzeria, and it says in front of me, Pastaria. I never even heard of that one, but it's probably true. I know this. Medi is a great guy, and he's the owner for 40 years, Talena's. And this is the one in Creve Coeur. The other one is not even there anymore. But, you know, Medi was involved in all of this and has done just a great job with Talena's. Anything you can think of that's Italian, they've got that at Talena's. But let me add in. For me, it is the spaghetti and meatballs. I love them. I really do. No joke. Now, I can't eat them all the time because listen, anything will put weight on me, but that spaghetti and meatballs, it's just great. And other things too, and some special surprises because Medi is not even Italian. He's Iranian, and he's got some interesting things that he puts out there sometimes because he just knows all about food from everywhere. He's very, very good. Like I say, I'm going to have him down here. And he's a fun, smart guy. And that is Talena's in Creve Coeur, Olive and 141. You'll love it. Okay, let me talk about Kamala and her big interview tonight. Now, you know, people have said Kamala doesn't know anything. She can't even do an interview. Now, the truth is, she can do an interview. She's done more than an interview. She's done interviews. She's done debates, town hall meetings. Kamala Harris is not afraid of anything. She was a senator who questioned people on the various committees that she was part of. She really is outstanding. And in those committee rooms, I mean, we saw this on television. She made everybody look stupid that came before her, that if they didn't know what they were talking about, because she was prepared. She did know what she was talking about. Now, come back here to 2024, and what have we got? We have people running around saying that Kamala doesn't know anything about any specific policies. She can't describe her policies. She doesn't have a policy except communism. Oh, she's a communist, according to Donald, because, you know, her father was a commie. Please. I mean, the whole discussion is ridiculous. Kamala is going to show you tonight for 2 hours how smart she is. And what's important about this is that you need to understand that she didn't practice for the last 2 months so she could come out and do this interview tonight. It's not like she was getting ready for it. She was nowhere near anything, but they suddenly poured all this information into her head, and here comes Kamala. So now she's going to do something that she could never do before. That's ridiculous. She's going to do a fabulous job, and when she does, you're going to understand this is Kamala Harris. That's all. She's been smart all along, and she's smart now. She can handle this interview tonight without any problem. Now, I'll grant you that MSNBC is not going to be trying to tear her down. But maybe anybody who's thinking about tearing her down should be glad that it's MSNBC who's doing it, because you can't tear her down. And you're going to find that out tonight. This is a smart woman. Now, I know people like her who can answer questions all the time. I mean, you put me anywhere, and I assure you, I can answer the questions. I know what I think. Kamala Harris knows what she thinks. I know other broadcasters who know what they think. I know other political people who really don't know a lot at all. And you could give them 6 months or 6 years, and they wouldn't know anything. But Kamala knows a lot. And you're going to hear that tonight. She's going to tell you a lot of the different ways that she wants to create this opportunity economy. But I also want to warn you in advance. Kamala is not going to tell you about what might happen in the stock market. Nor should she. That's not her job tonight. I don't know. Maybe she will talk about understanding the risks of economics. I doubt it. But I'm saying this to anybody within earshot. Economics include risk. Capitalism includes risk. I name some names: Polaroid, Eastman Kodak, Xerox. These were some of the biggest name companies in this country in the 1970s. They were Microsoft, Apple, and any other, you know, Meta, all of them. Same thing. NVIDIA, same thing. Back in the 60s, they called them glamour stocks. Today, they call them the Magnificent Seven. But any way you cut it, giant booms, not just in the United States, in the world, anywhere, are followed by periods of contraction, and those periods of contraction are painful. So all I can say to you is this: if you've been on this train to the moon, well, then you just better find some ways to protect yourself at some point, because it won't go forever. It can't go forever. I don't care who's running it. Now, if Donald were running it, well, we know where that goes. All you have to do is check DJT. That's down from $80 billion. I'm sorry. $10 billion, $80 a share. So $10 billion in Donald's pocket. Currently, about $1.5 billion. So he's, you know, wiped himself out. Now, for him, it's no big deal because he had nothing. They handed him $10 billion, and he turned it into $1.5. Now, he can do that for the country, too. No question about it. He'll get you that deal. He's been giving people that deal for as long as anybody can remember. Remember Art of the Deal? This is the deal. He takes X amount of money, and he shrinks it by 90%, and then files bankruptcy and tells you how smart he really is. But see, nobody even cared about how smart he might have been or might not have been before he did this stupid presidency bit, because it was really nobody's business except for some prosecutors who were trying to get him. And when I say trying to get him, they've been trying to get Donald long before he got into politics. But he says, oh, he's a victim because they want to get him politically. They want to weaponize, blah, 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 blah. I can't even say all that stuff. It's too stupid. But I will say this. Donald starts with X, and then he ends up with zero. Is there anything else to say? Or how, say it this way. He starts with 100% and goes down to, well, I could say zero, but let's be generous. 1%. But he can wipe out anything you give him. He can wipe out a university, which I shouldn't even say that word, because what he called Trump University, you know, everybody says, all the prosecutors who came after him, that it was a scam. It wasn't a university. It was a scam. Everything he does is a scam. But you know what? The country knows this about him. The country's figured this out. Everybody is not stupid. Some are, I'm sorry to say. But no, everybody is not. And again, I point to the great article in the Washington Post yesterday that was written by Eugene Robinson, who is one of the editors at the Washington Post, where he explained that as much as it's possible that Donald's ahead, which people say, yeah, those polls are wrong. Well, guess what? Maybe the polls are wrong. And as Eugene Robinson says, and as I say, maybe it's the other way. Maybe the polls are wrong because Kamala is doing substantially better than anybody realizes at this point. It could be either. But I'm going to bet on Kamala by 10% come November 5th, and I'm just going to hope that I don't look stupid because it turns out that she's going to win by 15%. But I think 10% is a good range, and very likely women, blacks, young people. I'm telling you right now, it is going to wipe this guy off of the political map so fast that all these people worried about the one vote in the Electoral College that they were afraid they might lose in Nebraska, which they saved. I think it's going to be considered a joke by the time we get to November 5th. Although, I understand Donald is all prepared to fight back and say, after he loses by some kind of a landslide, he's going to say, oh no, I won by a landslide. And then we'll get into that ridiculous argument probably for 4 or 6 weeks. And the next thing we'll know, Kamala Harris will be president of the United States. So that's what I have to say tonight. Don't forget, our time, 6 o'clock, that's 1 hour from now, MSNBC for 2 hours, Kamala Harris interviewed. I think you will find it extremely good and interesting, and you'll find her to be very smart. And I remind you, the St. Louis Suit Company, Wendy's, Jewels on Hampton, and Talena's. I'm Mark Kaysen. This is Showdown. Good night.